Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, July 3rd, 2014. Six UN staff members in South Sudan were barred from traveling to Uganda.
The staff were denied travel. We were all from one ethnic group, which is the Nuer ethnic group. So some of the staff from the other ethnicity were not happy.
And the governor of Central Equatoria State says he will continue to talk about federalism.
We also said we are for federalism. And still we say continue to talk about federalism.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairman of the UNMISS National Staff Association says six of their members were prevented by Juba Airport security officers from leaving South Sudan earlier this week. Bennett Kenyi calls the decision ethnically motivated. He says the incident is a breach of the status of force agreement signed between the government of South Sudan and the United Nations.
You know, the incident happened on Tuesday when national staffs were planning to travel from Juba to Entebbe. And the purpose of the national staff going to Entebbe is because they are going to attend a training workshop, which is within the mission's priority of capacity building of national staff. So after their passports were taken for exit stamping, and some of them were already boarding the plane, four of the staff members were asked to come down, and later they were told that they are not allowed to travel.
They were asked to disembark from the plane?
Yeah, correct. And at the end they were told that they are not traveling.
And this national staff, we also understand that the reason for preventing them was because of their ethnicity. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
When we went deep to find out the staff who were denied travel, we were all from one ethnic group, which is the Nuer ethnic group. So some of the staff from the other ethnicity were not happy because why is it that a colleague from what ethnic group has been asked to disembark on the plane and not allowed to travel? So there were a lot of questions there.
Have you communicated with the government to find out why they are targeting your staff who are coming from a certain ethnic community?
The issue was taken up by our chief of staff office, and because it's only our chief of staff office that has contact with the Minister of Foreign Affairs in the government. They were able to engage using their old diplomacy until yesterday evening. The passport and the UN IDs for this national staff were released to them, and it was today morning that the staffs were given their passports back and their IDs.
Are they able to travel now to join their colleagues in Entebbe?
They are not able to travel because, you know, the training started and they will not be able to catch up. So what the National Staff Association has done is trying to raise with UNMISS leadership so that if there's similar training in the coming days or in the near future, will have to be considered.
The government spokesperson came on record saying that they don't prevent the UN from doing their work.
What exactly happened is, there's what we call status of force agreement, which has been signed between the United Nations and the government of the Republic of South Sudan. And that clearly allows UN to perform their work freely, and they have privileges with us. But what has happened is the creation of SOFA, Status of Force Agreement. Not only that, South Sudan is one of the member states of the United Nations. So when you tend to pick on tag of ethnicity or race, is a clear violation of the United Nations Charter.
That's Bennett Kenyi, chairman of the UNMISS National Staff Association, speaking to me today from Juba. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makui says his government has what he calls good reasons for preventing any South Sudanese working for UNMISS from leaving the country. Makui says South Sudanese working for the UN are not under any blanket immunity.
I have no knowledge about what has happened, but one thing is this. a South Sudanese who is working with the UN or any other is not exempted from being questioned on issues to do with the security of his own nation. Unless you are telling me that, yes, a South Sudanese who is an employee of a nation should not be questioned on anything.
Well, that's
that not, is not the case.
That's not what I'm saying either. What I'm
saying
is...
I don't know I don't know why were they prevented, but there must have been a good reason which made the government of South Sudan to stop them from traveling.
They said they were all from one ethnic group, and the reasons for preventing them from traveling is because they are from Nuer community.
But where were they going?
They were going to Uganda.
Are you sure that they are all employees? They were all employees of UNMISS?
That is what UNMISS confirmed to us today. Speaking to us, they said these are
okay,
all their staff.
So far, we don't know. We cannot prevent any UNMISS personnel from traveling abroad without any reason.
But they were told that they are not allowed to go out of the country. They were told by security that...
Yes. They might have been told to not to go if they have. They could be told not to go if they have. If there are reports of they exercising subversive activities against the government. Anyway, I will not. I don't know what happened. I will first inquire. You can call me any other time. But the general rule is that a South Sudanese, who is in any way or the other exercising or doing any subversive activities against the government under the guise of UN is not protected.
But are there any evidence that these guys were doing any subversive acts?
I said I don't know. But this is a general rule I'm telling you.
That's South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwi speaking to me earlier today from Juba. Less than a month after President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar reiterated their commitment to obeying the cessation of hostilities agreement they signed in May, the UN fears the two sides are at the brink of a renewed fighting. Simon Wakiwudu prepared this report for VOA in Juba, which is voiced by VOA fellow Nabil Biagio.
The UN mission in South Sudan's head of peace building, reintegration and recovery, Dirk Segar, says thousands of people fearing renewed fighting are pouring into UN camps in Bantiu and Malakal.
The government forces and the opposition forces are often in very close proximity of each other, so I think there are many people who have fears that things might erupt from one day to another, and I think they are looking for that reason. It's not because of wide-scale hostilities at this time, but maybe the threat of violence or the fear that it might erupt that also presses some of these IDPs to come to our sides.
Segar says besides worrying about their safety, food security is also forcing hundreds of IDPs in the greater Upper Nile region to the UN camps. He says markets were destroyed and those who can find food cannot afford to pay for it. Jeffrey Banger, the head of UNMISS Protection of Civilians Unit, says they're doing all they can to keep South Sudanese citizens safe. Segar says the more than 10,000 IDPs in 10 UN camps across the country face numerous challenges, including a shortage of space, outbreak of diseases, and poor sanitary conditions. Those deteriorating conditions have led to 6 suspected cases of cholera at the UN's Bantiu camp.
The humanitarian organizations and has been working very closely together with UNMISS to improve this situation where possible, both by trying to improve the existing conditions inside our bases, as well as trying to create new protection sites to decongest some of the current improvised sites.
Segar says UNMISS is also doing what it can to provide humanitarian assistance to those in need living outside the UN camps. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
The governor of Central Equatoria State has dismissed rumors that 3 governors, including him, are being targeted for assassination by the central government. He also has a stern warning for the 2 largest ethnic groups in the country, the Dinka and the Nuer. He says that pledging loyalty to tribe instead of the nation of South Sudan is only going to make things worse in the country. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports in Juba.
Central Equatoria State Governor Clement Wanikonga issued the warning about tribal loyalties today at a well-attended news conference at his secretariat. He says there are signs that favoritism based on tribal lines is common in South Sudan and warns that it might further fragment the country.
Can one tribe or two tribes make a nation? No. South Sudan is for us all. And all of us contributed in kind, even those who are on the government side. If you operate a stomach of an SPLA soldier, you'll find also they eat the food of my mother.
Konga is a member of the minority Mundari tribe. He called the news conference to address rumors that President Salva Kiir and the army chief of staff were planning to assassinate him and the governors of Western and Eastern Equatoria. The assassination rumors reportedly began because the three state leaders are advocating for a federal system of government, which would give states more power. Mr. Kiir is strongly opposed to changing from the current system under which the president has a great deal of power. Konga said he and his colleagues have been open in their support of federalism and should not be threatened because of it.
And if we are being disliked because of our frankness, then there is something wrong. We shall never attack anybody. We are here to defend ourselves.
Konga says he and the other two governors met with Mr. Kiir to discuss the alleged assassination plot and other issues, including federalism. After the meeting, Konga said he believes the assassination rumors were started to try to get South Sudanese to back either rebel leader Riek Machar, who is a Nuer, or President Kiir, who is a Dinka. The rumors were also supposed to show that South Sudanese are loyal along tribal lines, not to the Young Republic of South Sudan, Konga says. He says South Sudanese should reject calls to divide them along tribal lines.
As South Sudanese, we have to live together. We have to fight together so that we give chance of peace to our people. Let our people live in peace. Why just look for problems while other people don't want?
Konga says the three governors also discussed with Mr. Kiir whether South Sudan should change to a federal system of government. Early this week, newspaper and broadcast journalists said they have been warned not to publish or broadcast information about federalism by government security officers. Konga says he will not be silenced.
We also said we are for federalism, and still we shall continue to talk about federalism.
The governor of Central Equatoria wants a federal system of government to be written into the permanent constitution of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
In our series on the debate about federalism, today residents of Kwajok in Warrap State are calling on South Sudanese communities to remain united and face the country's enormous political and economic challenges together. As part of the continuing series on federalism, Santo Monud reports from Kwajok for VOA that some prominent leaders within the state say pursuing a federal system of government could turn the country into fragmented societies.
Pro Dashendal, who leads the Warrap State Women's Union, says women in the state by and large do not support federalism. He says the notion of federal system of government is creating division among South Sudanese communities.
The women of Warrap State are not interested in it. We are even sure of ourselves that in South Sudan women are united and we don't want this system to break our relationship.
Akin Tongaleu, the acting governor of Warrap State, says people advocating for federalism have a hidden agenda. He also believes federalism would lead to a sectarian form of governance.
If we say that we are going for a federalism, it will take us backward according to understanding of our people, their belief on sectionism. People are remaining section, are remaining tribe. We have 64 tribes. Section in South Sudan, which is talking a different language. If you go now for a federalism, everybody now will take advantage on this.
William Ding Akon is Warrap State SPLM Director of Communication and Translation. He says federalism will only pave the way for more conflict and anarchy among the people of South Sudan. He says South Sudanese will be better off if they embrace a decentralized form of government.
People want to divide South Sudan and create another vacuum and conflict for our people. But we don't need any other conflict. We need unity. We need really peace and stability, at least to pay something to our people, because we have many orphans, we have many widows.
Morris Mabior Awudjok, the Warabi State Secretary General of Workers' Union, says under a federal system, the country could not afford to finance some administrative units. He says many people are advocating for a federal system because they think they will get more government representation. He says they are mistaken.
Some thought that if a federal system is adopted, then they are going to have more counties, more fayam, more states, so that everyone have its own administration unit. And for this reason, we have no enough resources to meet all the budget line for new counties, new fayam, and new states.
President Salva Kiir, who hails from Greater Bahr Al Ghazal region as one lawmakers in the National Legislative Assembly, that they must work towards uniting the people of South Sudan, and he says federalism will not unite the South Sudanese people. For VOA News, I am Santino Manudayuel in Kwajok, Warab State.
A top United States official visiting Juba warns there will be consequences if leaders of the warring sides in South Sudan's conflict fail to hold accountable those who committed crimes against civilians. Philip Aleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Stephen Feldstens, Deputy Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor, issued the warning after meeting this week with various stakeholders to the stalled peace talks in Addis Ababa. He says the United States is deeply concerned about reports of human rights violations committed by both foreign and anti-government forces and will hold the leaders of both sides responsible if action is not taken.
At the moment, economic sanctions are not on the table, but we are talking about individual sanctions, which we already have done and which we are in the process of considering whether further ones may be warranted for those who are most responsible for some of those violations. So we're thinking about all options right now.
While there must be accountability for crimes committed, Feldstein also says both sides must return to the peace talks in Addis to avert looming famine, and those talks must be inclusive.
Ultimately, our goal, as is the goal, I think, for most people in South Sudan, is to find a way back to a sustainable and enduring peace. And in order to do that, we need to make sure that all stakeholders are involved, that we're not just talking to a few people. It's not just a conversation that involves the government and the opposition, but involves civil society, church groups, and many others to have an open dialogue about what has happened and what needs to occur as we move forward.
Feldstein says the United States will not impose a solution on South Sudanese leaders, but will do what it can to ramp up the peace process. At the same time, he says, the U.S. is working closely with the United Nations to document allegations of atrocities committed during the fighting.
On the one hand, we do believe some sort of mechanism of accountability needs to be in place, but we don't want to actually specify what that should be. We think that's something that needs to be owned both by the population in South Sudan and an African-owned solution, and so therefore we are pressing for principles right now.
He says the top priority for the warring parties now is to observe the cessation of hostilities agreement and to reach a comprehensive peace deal. The UN and rights agencies have said both sides have committed what could amount to crimes against humanity, including rape, murder, arbitrary arrests, torture, and targeted killings based on ethnicity. The UN says more than 1.3 million people have been uprooted from their homes since fighting erupted nearly 7 months ago. For VOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Safe disposal of household garbage is important to protect everyone's health. Flies, rats, and other dangerous scavengers are attracted to trash piles. Rainwater can pool there and breed insects that spread diseases like malaria. Other dangers can develop too. To prevent this, proper disposal of garbage is very important. Do not burn anything plastic, since that can foul the air. Clean, keep, and store plastics, as well as other items that can be reused. For other solid waste, talk with others and pick a site for a communal pit. Make layers of trash and soil until it is filled. Then mark the area so people don't try and use it for another purpose.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some internal displaced people are coming up with innovations to survive. Find out more when we come back.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on the events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That is South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
Put your flags up in the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit voafootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at voafootball.com.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think the internet should be censored? If so, under what circumstances?
I don't think the internet should be censored, because although the internet has done a lot of harm to the society, but it has contributed to the betterment of the society, because it has allowed the world to become a global community, like making people to interact with each other, and it has been a source of information to the society at large.
I don't think the internet should be censored, because the internet is there to show what is there, what is in the public. So, you know, people, they are the one to choose. I want to see this one, because the internet doesn't force you to see anything or explicit things or sexual things, for example. So if you want them, you can get them. If you don't want them, you can't get them. So the internet is there and it's good. It's perfect. It doesn't need to be censored, you know?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. As the weeks stretch into months, some IDPs are figuring out how to make a living in United Nations camps. As Mungume Debs Rakarinj reports for VOA from Juba, some have even taught themselves new skills.
Children and adults walk by or purchase small items at makeshift markets set up inside the Tomping UN protection site, where more than 14,000 people live in tents. A 22-year-old Nyajwak Gatkoth was a secretary for a private company in Juba up until the fighting broke out in December. That is when she became separated from her husband and fled with her two children to the Tomping UN protection site. Without her husband, an official who worked at a national ministry, and her salary as a secretary, Gatkoth says she had to find a way to support her family. So she started a small restaurant inside the IDP camp.
I had to help myself and my children. It is better for me to do something and earn something for my daily life and for my children. It is not good to stay idle. My children need to carry on, and I need to help them to continue with school.
Gatkoth says she's able to make a profit of 50 to 100 South Sudanese pounds per day, which supplements the handouts provided by UNMISS. Each person in the camp is given 5 kilograms of sorghum per month. Gatkoth cobbles together that and the money she makes from the restaurant to feed her family. She even employs three other women to help run the restaurant.
I pay these women differently. Some I pay 15 pounds per day, for example, those who wash dishes. Those who make kisara, I pay them 20 pounds. Those who make soup, I pay them 10 pounds. But my business, of course, depends on the number of customers that I get. If I have many customers, I'm always able to make a profit.
Gatkoth says it is not easy running your own business and sometimes loses money.
My challenge is that if it rains, I don't have anywhere to cook from. I don't even have anywhere to sit my customers because this tent leaks. Besides, when it rains, it blocks customers from coming. No one is willing to come.
Gatkoth hopes one day soon she'll be able to pack up her children and Miaga belongings and leave the camp, but will continue with her self-learned skills of running a business. When that happens, she plans to rent a better place where she won't have to worry about rain. Gatkoth Watch worked as a mason at various buildings in Juba. He earned about £50 per day. When fighting broke out, Roach ran to the IDP camp with his elderly grandfather and 11 other relatives, mainly children. He had to improvise on how to provide for so many people. That is when he decided to start selling charcoal.
I am doing this business to get money so that I can cater for my family expenses, like to pay for medical care for my children, because what we get from the UN is not good for the children. I also have to cater for my grandfather who is with me here in the camp.
Brokers buy a sack of charcoal from main markets like Konyokonyo at £60. They deliver it to him for £75, which Roach in turn sells for £80, making a profit of £5. He says he sells between 2 to 3 sacks per day. Like Gatkoth, he's so worried of the rain. Roach says once he's finally able to move his family out of the camp, he'll go back to his old job, construction. For VOA News, I am Gumedes Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Israeli jets struck targets in Gaza today while militants continued sending rockets into southern Israel amid mounting tension over the killing of an Arab teenager in East Jerusalem. The Israeli military said its jets targeted 15 Hamas terror sites in the Gaza Strip. Palestinian officials say 10 civilians were wounded. Israeli officials say the strikes were in response to over 20 rockets fired at Israel since Wednesday. A member of Somalia's parliament has been killed in a shooting claimed by militant group Al-Shabaab. The lawmaker was killed today when gunmen sprayed his car with bullets in the Somali capital, Mogadishu. A lawmaker who was riding with the MP, Abdullah Ahmed Konka, told VOA that the attackers drove next to the car and opened fire. And finally, Obama administration officials say the U.S. plans to boost security at some foreign airports amid concerns that Al-Qaeda may be developing new bombs that could be smuggled onto an airplane. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with a traditional song from Bahr el Ghazal region.
Kumaju, biar kumangar kena.
We have been listening to that traditional song from the Greater Bahr al-Ghazal region. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.